Welcome to another episode of Pardon My Enthusiasm, a horror podcast. Film, spooks, controversy, death, and crime, where the eerie is discussed. I'm your host, Damaris Montufar. Today's episode, Rogers, the Beautiful Cigar Girl. Who done did the murder? This 19th century cold case that is pretty much guaranteed to never be solved. Everyone is dead, information on the people is messy, and there was never anything really to go on. Mary Rogers had a weird story once you really look into it, and how her death went down isn't any different. Today, we'll be examining Mary Rogers, the Beautiful Cigar Girl, her family, her death, and how Edgar Allan Poe wrapped himself into it. Mary Cecile Rogers was born sometime in 1820, likely in Lima, Connecticut, but her birth is quite hush-hush. There are no publicly available birth records, and actually there are scattered records from her entire family from about 1814 to 1830-ish. There is a rad-tastic book, although I have not finished it all the way, about Mary Rogers and the sex culture of the 19th century called Mysterious Death of Mary Rogers, Sex and Culture in the 19th Century, 1997, by Amy Gilman Sherbnick. Bam, thank you. This book goes deep into the Rogers family, and so are we. Phoebe Waite is the supposed mother of Mary Rogers, who married Ezra Mather in 1795. They had five kids, Ezra, the junior, in 1797, Phoebe A., another junior, in 1799, Orlando in 1802, Robert in 1804, and Frederick in 1808, who was the only son to Mary. In 1808, Ezra was only 38 when he died after having been ill since the year before. So literally Frederick was born and Ezra died. He left Phoebe with a lot of property and money, but under the stipulation that if she remarried before their kids married, and I mean all five had to be married, the assets were to be sold or otherwise dealt with to only benefit the children. And more rules applied if their offspring were under the age of 21. I'm thinking about renting cars now. It's kind of weird. I had to reread that whole section like five times because it was confusing. It was very confusing. And just a little tidbit about the book, it's actually not that well written. It's a little all over the place, but it's got really interesting theories and information. So you're welcome. Phoebe remarried in 1814 to Daniel Rogers, so they sold the home. The Rogers family had a long recorded history with information on their heritage dating beyond the 1660s. Daniel's information is a little less linear. He was the fifth child in his home and 11 years younger than Phoebe when they wed. They only had one child, Mary Rogers. But her birth was strange for the pair. Not only was Phoebe 42, but they had been married for 6 years, and it was customary for couples of this time to have children every 2 years. Just like in her previous marriage, the longest gap was between Robert and Frederick, which was 4 years. But at this point, they had been together for six, nothing happened, and then bada bing, bada boom, 42-year-old Phoebe gave birth to Mary. And here's a real plot thickener for ya on why Mary's birth is shrouded in mystery. It's theorized that Mary Rogers is not the child of Phoebe and Daniel Rogers, but instead of Phoebe A., Phoebe and Ezra's daughter, who was 21 at the time and unwed. You see, towards the end of the 18th century, illegitimate children were popping up like daisies. And how family sorted this problem? Your grandma tells you they are your mom. So sisters are actually mother-daughter. But there's no written proof of it. Just very convincing circumstantial evidence. This would make Mary Rogers, Mary Mather, and other, because, you know, who's your daddy, by blood. Now, I honestly feel bad for Phoebe Rogers. She was a widow, only one child was married, which is a thing for the time, and most of her kids actually died. Like, from, like, what is it, 18, 24 to, like, the 40s, I guess. I mean, yeah, that's when Mary died. Like, her kids were just like, bum, 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 and no one lived that long. It's just sad. And I mean, that's as well as her second husband. Like, she was widowed once and then she was widowed again because Daniel died in 1834 from a steamship explosion in Mississippi. MISSISSIPPIY. I have no idea, but you know, it just done did happen. And with only her eldest son Ezra and her daughter Mary, she was like a lonely, twice widowed woman. Mary and Phoebe decided to make a new start in New York. They embodied a very progressive persona as a family of only women, working women without a quote proper home. This is also where information gets speculative and icky. A lot of working women in poor America find it necessary to involve themselves in sex work. And now I'm definitely not here to put down sex work because I'm like, let's a fucking do it, yeah. I'm not even gonna get into it. But especially during this time, that's shameful for them. It's not something you talk about. I mean, they're worried about only one of their five kids getting married. So priorities are just a little different. And it's especially sad because, you know, widowed and fatherless. And it's just like a very sad situation that they're in. And now, it's not explicitly said, but there is information that Phoebe and Mary had a boarding house, and that's where Mary met her man, Daniel Payne. And again, those like underlined things you read are that Daniel was one of her clients, as well as other men, which then helped with the rest of her stuff. Because Mary was known as a real beauty, so her employment was as a clerk in a tobacco shop, where she became the handsomely paid, beautiful cigar girl that everyone fancied. Pause, because I'm not going to record that. That little bell is my cat. Hi, Chapel. Say hello to the people. All right, then. She says, no, thank you. Back to it. The owner, John Anderson, was really supportive of anything Mary might need because she brought in so many customers, and that's where the wink wink nudge nudge the sex work kind of comes back in. Many claimed that they only went to the shop so that they could admire her and, you know, just exchange looks beyond and smell of her perfume. Oh my god, cat. And apparently there was an earlier disappearance in October 1838 where a random newspaper reported that she was gone or something of that nature, claiming that there was a suicide note, but she was actually just visiting a friend out of town. And in that book I mentioned, they said that there was also reports that it was actually maybe just a prank that someone left the note there. But I'm like, bro, what kind of a prank is that? But I'm on trying not to judge. It's just a little weird is all. And another idea with it is that Anderson had actually pushed the story to further get publicity for the tobacco shop and his famed cigar girl. But let's go back to Mary and Daniel, who became engaged late 1840, early 1841. It was a short-lived romance, seeing as they met in early 1840, and an even shorter engagement. Sidestep again, my cat's being very needy right now, and I feel mean not loving her, so there will be dinging, and I'm sorry. Also, her name's Chapel, because Nurse Chapel, because this is Star Trek. On to the actual murder. Kind of. On July 25th, 1841, Mary mentioned a trip she would be taking to visit family, but on July 28th, a mere 3 days later, her corpse was found floating in the Hudson River in Hoboken, New Jersey. The big theories on who killed Mary Rogers are gang violence. Mary was a highly sought out woman, turning men down and eventually becoming engaged. And if there is any truth to speculation about the sex work, it just kind of adds to it. But her violent murder could have been committed by a group of men who felt wronged by her for one reason or another. Because, you know, men own us and we're not allowed to say no. About a month after her body was found, some kids found some random clothes in some woods, and very specifically found a handkerchief embroidered with an MR. This added to the suspicion of gang violence, and it fits with the narrative of people reporting seeing someone who looked just like Mary being whisked around by some men on July 25th. Random men, gang men's, you know, whisked awayness, murder in the woods. Next is suicide. River deaths are always bringing people to think about suicide. You know, you think of like the San Francisco and people be dying there a lot. So I get it. Like, it's there. And while there's no too specific of a reason given to why she might commit suicide, I'm gonna give a few a go anyway. Depression. Because, you know, super normal. And especially if there's any truth to the possible sex work or attached to the third and most popular theory that Mary had an abortion. You know, there's just so much. The most popular theory is that Mary had a very botched abortion that killed her, so the doctor had to get rid of the body. Now, perhaps she did not die but was in excruciating pain or felt remorseful and then committed suicide. I mean, no clue, but it's not unlikely that an unwed woman being engaged definitely did not count during this time, who was pregnant would seek an abortion, and that it would end not very well. Tied to this story is the idea that Anderson was the one who likely arranged and paid for it, because who would idolize and fancy a harlot worker? Or maybe he was the daddy, so that's why he wanted the abortion. That's another one I find to be very odd. But my actual favorite, because I guess it's a little less sad, but not really, is that it actually was not Mary that was found. That Mary had run off, and this was another unfortunate woman who was beat and confused for Mary. But that's really not any better, and now I feel like I have to take it back because it's still very sad. But the abortion one is definitely the strongest in evidence, because she was violently hurt. It was New York during a time where bad abortions were common. I mean, they weren't illegal. Her fiance committed suicide, and we will get to that in just a moment. And her boss, Anderson, who was very carefully kept away from speculation, supposedly because he was such a big shot and no one wanted to touch him. Plus, New York during that time, to go back to that, had Madame Restel, a popular abortionist. It's one of those like, you know, sounds good. But back to Daniel, because whoa, brother. Daniel was, of course, a major suspect, because, you know, men. And it's always good to look at the immediate family and partners. If I die, please look at my partner, fight them, you know. I don't actually think, but don't quote me on this. Do not use this as evidence that it was not done, did wrong. Daniel had an alibi. And in the days after, when there was no word from Mary, he looked for her, giving her description in hopes that someone had seen her. And this got word out that the cigar girl was missing. While he was technically cleared, the media was relentless. A big reason was that his reaction was not what people expected or wanted. While he had been looking for her, when he was actually informed of her death, he was not alarmed and apparently never went out to see her body. And he didn't ask for further questions, just accepted what he was told. And you know what? That's fair. Like, that's fine. I don't know why we're so mad at him. It's hard. Like, you want to judge people for the way that they cope with stuff, but that's how you feel, brother. That's how you feel. But of course, finally, October 8th, 1841, his body was found reeking of alcohol with some laudanum next to him, and not too far from where Mary's body was found. Payne's brother said that he had been out of all sorts since Mary had died, and then he had picked up a drinking habit quickly and heavily. There are reports that with his body was a note that read, "To the world, here I am on the very spot. May God forgive me for my misspent life." I don't think that's admission to guilt necessarily. I mean, suicide is still very frowned upon in many societies, not all of course, but especially with the 19th century and their sensitivities, it's not unheard of for him to have reached a point where he wanted to die and knew that that was like a social and moral damnation. There were so many reports on the evening of his death. There were some women that were like, yeah, we're the last ones to give him his drinks, and where his body was found and the note, I read somewhere that they were like, oh yeah, I saw him stumbling and I saw him fall over. He probably died right then. And it's like, oh, okay, thanks for saying something. It's just a little weird, but I don't know. I guess I am still very fixated on here I am on the very spot, but he never went and he was near it, not on it, I guess, but that's not to say that's not where she was pushed. And may God forgive me for my misspent life. I'm still pretty attached to the idea that it's because suicide tends to be a no-no. And it's something a lot of people view as a weakness. You know, you couldn't take your life. And while that's very insensitive and not really accounting for the entire problem and the entire reality that is mental health, it's understandable that during this time, he'd be like, well, I'm gonna fucking die because I don't give a shit. Let's go, like, party and drink and get fucked up until I die, you know? And then he's prepped for it. And now we get to media. This episode is actually quite short, and that's that. I found a lot of weird shit to talk about, I think, just, like, with her family's story. But the media in this one is funny because it's literally Edgar Allan Poe. And I'm a little goth kid, so of course I really like Edgar Allan Poe. I have since I was a kid. And I initially actually wanted my podcast name to have something to do with Edgar Allan Poe. I was thinking Horrible Sanity, but that's already a podcast. I haven't listened to them. They might be good, they might not, I have no idea. But I mean, can't just go and take their name. So we landed with Pardon My Enthusiasm for another gothic-y styled film, Corpse Bride. But now to the real Paul Bushnish. The extraordinary details which I am now called upon to make public will be found to form, as regards sequence of time, the primary branch of series of scarcely intelligible coincidences whose secondary or concluding branch will be recognized by all readers in the late murder of Mary Cecilia Rogers at New York. There are few persons, even among the calmest thinkers, who have not occasionally been startled into a vague, yet thrilling, half-crescent in the supernatural by coincidences of so seemingly marvelous a character that, as mere coincidence, the intellect has been unable to receive them. Such sentiments, for the half-credence of which I speak, have never the full force of thought. Such sentiment are seldom thoroughly stifled unless by reference to the doctrine of chance, or, as it is technically termed, the calculus of probabilities. Now, this calculus is, in its essence, purely mathematical, and thus we have the anomaly of the most rigidly exact in science applied to the shadow and spirituality of the most intangible in speculation. That is the introductory and first paragraph to Edgar Allan Poe's 1842, The Mystery of Marie Margaret. She be too long for me to actually read here and not feel somewhat crazy for making you listen, but literally look up the name and PDF next to it, and it comes up easy peasy. And now I'm like, wow, I should become one of those YouTubers that just like reads poetry, but I don't actually know if my voice is quite there. But this story was made into a noir film in 1942, which now I'm like, should I watch it? Should I watch it? I didn't, because it doesn't actually have anything to do with this, but this short story was released in 3 installments in the Snowden's Lady's Companion in November and December of 1842 and February 1843, an apparent sequel to the mystery in La Rue Morgue, April 1841, which is considered to be the first detective story on print. It doesn't really try to hide its inspiration, obviously, with that introduction, but there are random posts online stating the possibility that Anderson paid Poe to write this mystery to deflect attention from him, and let me say how much I enjoy that theory. Random, perhaps uncalled for, brilliant. I am all here for just, like, how bonkers shit is. I actually super want to discuss this one, like, in this end part. Like, sometimes I'm like, I don't know what to say, but this one I'm like, oh, do you think Anderson is daddy? Do you think Anderson has anything to do with it at all? Do you think he publicized that, like, missing persons thing, like, a couple years prior? Like, does that have anything to do with it? Do you think that Payne's letter was his way of confessing? Do you think it was an abortion? Do you think it was gang violence? Do you think it's one of those, like, it was probably just, like, this most random fucking thing ever, and now everyone's like, there's a big conspiracy, and you're like, no, bro, it was just like, aw, dang, I ran her over, and now I gotta, like, toss her overboard. But it was supposed to be kind of violent. Like, she was supposed to be pretty, like, fucked up. I really hate putting it that way. Obviously, there's no pictures, just illustrations, and the descriptions are also very vague about everything regarding this case. But I'm just like, what happened? Like, who happened here? Because I just, like, so baffled. And on a completely irrelevant but somewhat relevant note, how weird is it to be like, 1775 is when they were born? Like, obviously people were born all the time. I guess it's, I don't think about it. Like, I'm either looking back at, like, 1850 or something. I'm not really looking that far, I guess. Or at least I'm not looking at the dates. It was just very confusing for me emotionally, trying to say 18 and 17 instead of, like, 2012, which is, I always think it's 2011. Like, 24/7, I'm like, oh my god, that was, like, 2 years ago. 2011 was not 2 years ago. But that's pretty much it for this one. This is another little shorty episode, although I don't even know what that means, because I feel like there's no consistency. I have, like, a 30-minute episode, and then there's one that's, like, 50 minutes. It's like, oh, okay, how cool. But this was a very small case, and I kind of needed the lightness that was this case after the past couple of weeks of rough topics. But again, what are your theories? What do you think happened? Which do you think is most interesting? And how are we feeling about Edgar Allan Poe writing a short story about this poor woman? Because, brother, I don't know. As always, thank you very much for listening. And if you are ever so inclined, please follow me on Instagram at pardonmyenthusiasm.podcast, Facebook at pardonmyenthusiasm.podcast, and Twitter at pardonmepod. Bye!